of Madden Monday with me, Tim Benz, and with Mark Madden from 105.9 The X. Listen to him Monday through Friday, 3 until 6 on The X, and you can read him four times a week at Trib Live. The Steelers lose to the Jets at Acrisure Stadium. The debut of Kenny Pickett in a Steeler uniform in the regular season got everybody revved up after halftime, but then, after he was part of the comeback, he was also part of the collapse and part of the demise. The demise, though, started with the defense, and let's start right there. Mark, this, I think, proves something you and I have talked about on many occasions on this podcast and in other outlets across Pittsburgh where we work together, on the X, wherever it might be. There are issues afoot with this Steelers team well beyond the quarterback, and there are issues that Kenny Pickett can't fix himself.
Unless he can go both ways and play defense, that's certainly true. The Steelers had a 10-point lead on a pretty bad football team in the fourth quarter at home at Acrisure Stadium, and they could hold on to it. Zach Wilson, the boy toy, he drove the Jets down the field twice with I don't want to say minimal effort because he looked pretty good, but how hard was it? The Steeler defense offered only token resistance, and I don't buy the constant excuse that, well, T.J. Watt's hurt. You shouldn't need T.J. Watt to beat the New York Jets at home with a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter. Oh, the defense is on the field too much. Okay, it's the highest-paid defense in football. You make the most, you got to do the most, and they're not doing enough. It's not a good defense. It's not a good team. The quarterback situation is what you're going to talk about because it's sexy, but you're right. In terms of the issues that make them a crap football team, quarterback is not at the top of the list. Not close. I think the receiving core is something to talk about because clang, clang, clang. I mean, how many passes do those guys drop or let slip through their hands or worse yet, kind of bump up in the air for interceptions?
I think it was three between all the receivers. There was the deflected pass that also went off of Deontay Johnson's hands for an interception. Claypool could have had the deep shot on Pickett's first throw as an NFL quarterback. And then Freiermuth went up for a throw that, as Pickett himself said, he just can't throw that pass in that situation. But at least Freiermuth was able to go up and get his hands on it. But yeah, all three of them turned into picks.
That pick lost the game.
It did, and it's one that shouldn't have been thrown and maybe should have been caught, so you can put blame on both sides.
Yeah, Muth could have caught it. Pickett should not have thrown it. And if Pickett doesn't throw it, then Muth doesn't have to catch it. I mean, I blame Pickett for that one. He should have ate the ball and thrown it away, just not done that.
The offensive line, too, Mark, regressed after 2 weeks of progress, I thought. They were bad in the first half. Trubisky was sacked three times. In the second half, let's see, Pickett had 15 yards rushing, so that means they only averaged 3.2 yards per carry, and a lot of that was the 15 he got. Then there were the five penalties that the offensive line racked up as well. So regression on that unit's part.
Yeah, the five penalties were really aggravating. Najee Harris had a decent day, but only decent. And I think if he weren't a first-round pick, that he would have given away to Jaylen Warren by now, don't you?
I do, and Warren tried to take blame for that pitch from Kenny Pickett. He said he might have lined up too deep, but Pickett corrected afterwards and says, no, that's on me. And that was another bad play that Pickett had. I mean, we're going to dwell, I'm sure, during the course of the week on a lot of the good he did, much of which was with his legs. But right before the Freiermuth interception, that could have been disaster on a bad pitch, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, we are going to talk about what Pickett did that was good, but he wasn't that great. He threw three picks, and I know deflections and yada, yada, and he still threw three interceptions in one half of football. I like the spark he provided. I think he played with some courage. He didn't have the bad body language out there like Trubisky's had pretty much since minute one. When the regular season started, but Kenny Pickett didn't play that great. I'll tell you the debate I love now, Tim. It's already on Twitter, and I tend to use this to great effect on my radio show. People are saying, what if you do go like 3-14, 4-13, and a great quarterback's available in the first round? Do you take like a Bryce Young? And my answer to that is no. No, you do not. At long last, you finally take that stud left tackle or whatever lineman.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think there's something there with Pickett. I always have. I liked the drafting of Pickett far more than I did the signing of Trubisky. I've said that since they signed Trubisky. So I think I've been consistent there. And my expectations for Pickett is that he'll be a good NFL quarterback. I don't think he'll be a great one. I think he'll be a good one. And if they can assemble a good enough team around him, that might result in playoff success. But that, to me right now, feels like it's years down the road.
Were you there when Trubisky talked afterwards?
I was, and that meant...
Did he look pissed to you? He looked pissed to me.
Yeah, he looked and sounded pissed to me. Where he sounded the most pissed was when he was asked afterwards, after the game, you know, what was the explanation that was given to you at halftime? And he said, well, you're going to have to ask the coach about that. And people had already asked Tomlin. He said it was for a spark. And he just said, yeah, a spark. There you go. So I think...
Well, you know what? That's a ridiculous reason to give. That's like when somebody changes the goalie. Well, it wasn't because the first goalie stunk. We just wanted to give the team a spark. It's nonsense. You make the change because the goalie stunk. You make the change because the quarterback stunk.
Well, if it's just a spark, then that connotes to me that it's not a long-term decision. And if you were to go back to Trubisky, my God, how would this town react?
You have to stay with Pickett now. I said from moment one that the minute Pickett goes in, he has to be the starter till he's hurt or until he proves decisively he can't do it. And that's, you know, literally years from now, Tim, to prove that, you know, for a number one pick, 20th overall. The other great debate I'm seeing on Twitter is, well, now Trubisky should be the third-string quarterback and Rudolph should be the backup. I have no idea why people want that or what the significance of that would be, but that's what I'm seeing.
I don't get it either. I guess there's just a presumption there that what we've seen from the offense is as bad as it can get. And you know what, Mark? Why not trade Trubisky then if somebody wants a quarterback? Maybe you'll get more for him than you would Rudolph if somebody asks.
I'm not sure his value went up in this last 3.5 games, Tim.
I don't think it did either, but I don't know what Rudolph's is, much beyond a late-round pick. Heck, trade him back to Buffalo so he can be a backup against you when you go up there next week. I think the schedule, Mark, these next four games, there's a huge part of me that believes, whether the Steelers would ever actually admit it or not, that they were waiting as long as they could, hopefully, to get through these next 4 weeks, and if they had to make a change, do it over the bye, because it gets a little easier after the bye and they've got a week to ramp up for it. They just couldn't because they knew that their season was on the line against the Jets. There's no coming back from losing to the Jets.
I still maintain, even though they lost today, the right thing to do would have been to start Trubisky through the bye week because their season was done when they lost consecutive games to New England and Cleveland. Okay? And I just... You know, there's always the attempt to save the season, which puts Pickett in a pretty pressure-packed role, if people interpret it as, I think, not that Tomlin meant it that way, but don't you think that's kind of what it looks like? He's expected to save the season, and he can't. So I would have waited till after the bye week, but they always think they can salvage what's gone bad. Like when they went 0-4 to start the season 1 year, and they rallied to 8-8, which accomplished nothing. When Ben's elbow exploded, they traded for Minka, and they battled to 8-8, which proved nothing. You know, they always want to win the next game because they're the Pittsburgh Steelers. We want to do as good as we can because we're the Pittsburgh Steelers. And Tim, that makes me wonder if Tomlin, at some level, doesn't sweat that record of never having had a losing season. He wants to maintain it, even at the expense of getting a high draft pick.
Yes, I agree with you there. And one thing that really should slap Steelers fans in the face is that they've accumulated this 1-3 record with three losses coming as a result of Mac Jones, Zach Wilson, and Jacoby Brissett coming back against you or putting the game away in a close game in the fourth quarter. What if you hang in there with Buffalo for three quarters and you see Josh Allen with the football in the fourth or Tom Brady at home against Tampa at Acrisure Stadium that he owned when it was called Heinz Field? You know, like, there's no way you play with any level of confidence in that scenario.
Tim, in that vein, I thought the boy toy did pretty good for the Jets in the fourth quarter, didn't you?
Yeah, he turned it up for sure. I think when he realized he could escape Alex Highsmith and the pass rushers whenever he felt like it, that gave him a great deal of confidence. He made that boneheaded shovel half throw that Minka was, I think, stunned that it actually came out of his hand. That could have turned into a pick six the other way. That was a terrible decision by Wilson. But aside from that, yeah, I thought he did really well in that second to last drive, the first touchdown drive, where he converted three different third downs for scores. And then the one third down he needed on the second touchdown drive, he completed the pass. And they didn't have to get to third down after that, Mark. The defense was so bad.
Yeah, Minka had another good game, though. I mean, you got to give that guy credit. He is performing above the level of the unit, which is often tough for safety to do. A lot of times, guys at certain positions, I think safeties, one, perform as well as the unit. In terms of impact, I should say, because last year, Minka had a great year, but he had to make too many tackles. That's what the defensive unit dictated. This year, though, three interceptions in four games, that's pretty impressive, even though the defense is doing very poorly. Only one sack again today.
Yeah.
Minimal pressure on the boy toy. Alex Highsmith, though, Tim, he got a sack. Little League Dad will be happy.
His sack came in the first half. There were two more where he couldn't finish, and that's always been the book on Alex Highsmith. And
there were at least two more, Tim, where he couldn't finish. There were two more where Zach Wilson pretty much escaped his immediate grasp, but I counted at least a couple more where I'm not saying he should have had him, but he could have.
Right, and that's always been, you know, Highsmith's biggest criticism of Highsmith. This isn't us picking on him. This is him accurately pointing out what his biggest flaw is.
Well, you know what a scenario I could see, Tim? I'm going to talk about this on the show and more as the season progressive. Let's say that they're 1-7 when Watt's ready to come back. Then there's no point in him coming back. He should get the surgery.
Well, he's due after the first stint on the IR to come back after Buffalo. So they can make that call even earlier than that.
Well, if they're 2-3, if they're 1-4, if they're 1-4, Tomlin will con himself, Watt will con himself, he'll play.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. Even if they're 2-3 by that point, because then by that point you're saying, oh my gosh, we just beat the Bills. Let's beat the Bucks and Brady when they come to Heinz Field.
Yeah, they're not going to beat Buffalo.
I don't think so either. I don't know who's all that good in the NFL this year, Mark. There's not a lot of elite teams separating themselves, but Buffalo is close. The Eagles are still undefeated, and I think the Dolphins and the Bucks are both pretty good.
Well, Buffalo did a good job rallying to beat Baltimore. And, Tim, the siren song of the terminally optimistic is the Steelers only one game out of first place.
That's right. The AFC North is keeping them in it. What else did you notice, Mark, from the weekend in the NFL, aside from that, the division still stinks?
That's pretty much it, Tim. The division stinks. I was disappointed. I thought Jacksonville could pull it off today. And they led for a bit. They're coming on. You're right. It's amazing there's only one team left undefeated, isn't it?
Yeah, at the quarter pole, it's unbelievable that you can't, that there's this much parity that still exists.
Well, you know, there's a fine line, Tim, between parity, P-A-R-I-T-Y, and parody, P-A-R-O-D-Y. And I don't know, I think this is a bit closer to the latter. There's so much parity that it's silly.
Well, one thing that's happening, Mark, and, you know, we've done some gambling podcasts together. We do one together every week for Bet Rivers. The defenses are actually winning a bit more. The unders were hitting at like a 62% clip going into this weekend. And I think a big reason for that is the offensive lines are just overwhelmed on a weekly basis. There's so much talent up front defensively in the NFL and not very much offensively. And then you got these defensive schemes that are just built 100% around taking away big play wide receivers and down the field tight ends. It's helping to neutralize the quarterback advantage that elite teams used to have.
It doesn't matter, Tim, because pretty soon we'll be playing flag football after the Tua thing. How about J.J. Watt was defibrillated? Did you see that? And they shocked his heart back to regularity, and he played. It doesn't sound that safe to me, Tim.
Same thing with Tua. Like, the big complaint that I had about this, and I caught a little heat from some folks on Twitter for bringing it up in this manner, but I stand by it. Doesn't Tua have some sort of culpability if we're all going to be outraged about the system? Doesn't the player himself have some sort of culpability? What was he? Was he forced back on the field at gunpoint by the Dolphins?
I believe he was, Tim.
Stephen Ross doing it one more time.
Yeah, but my point about all this is they're actually going away from science. You know, they fired, dude, you know, the independent evaluator, you know, with the Sunday game, the concussion he didn't sustain against the Bills. They fired him, but they won't say what the doctor did wrong. Am I right, Tim? Have you seen anywhere what the doctor did wrong?
I just heard it was multiple mistakes, but I've yet to see what the multiple mistakes were.
What exactly were those mistakes?
Yeah, I don't know.
Shouldn't we be told that?
We should. If they're going to go so far as to make him the public fall guy, then make the reasons public as well.
Well, so here's the new policy in a nutshell. If you test negative for concussion, in other words, you're shown to have not been concussed, right?
Mm-hmm.
They can still say you walked funny, you have a concussion, you can't play. And now that this guy got fired, the independent evaluator, nobody's ever going to get sent back in the game once they get evaluated, no matter how clear they are given the previous testing.
And what angers me about it is it's all the players that are pearl-clutching and wringing their hands over this, players and ex-players who are now heads of the Players Association and whatnot. Meanwhile, just a couple weeks ago, when Cam Hayward got hurt, he went off the field and was held out of the game because he had a rib injury. This was the Miami game, I believe. No, this is the Cincy game. It was week one. He said he had a rib injury. He got the wind knocked out of him. But because he looked like he might have had a head injury, he was held back on the sidelines in protocol to be evaluated, and he couldn't get back on the field, and he was all mad about it. But, you know, he's in the union. He's the union rep for the Steelers. He signed off on what the policy is. And if he doesn't like the fact that he's been held out of a game, well, geez, with all this public backlash over what happened with Tua, to your point, Mark, what do you think's going to happen? That's going to happen on a weekly basis now, stuff like that.
Tim, I'll go one step further than that. If there's such a concern about player safety on the part of the PA, how come they approved increasing the schedule to 17 games and will eventually approve it an increase to 18 games?
Money, that's why, because they can't say no to the money either.
Yeah, well, that's fine. But then, you know, if the doctor says two is okay, send them back in. The Cincinnati Hospital, which is the number one hospital for testing of that ilk in the Cincinnati region, they didn't even keep him overnight after the Thursday night game. Are they going to get fired too?
That's why I keep getting agitated over why there's no culpability placed on the player. You know, the player could come out and say something by now if there was any reason to. He was, as much as anybody, Mark, adamant that it was a back problem in the first place. So, like, why aren't we up his backside? Because we just want to go against the corporation of the NFL. There's nobody singularly attached to the Miami Dolphins. We can just blame the organization. That's easier. That makes us feel better on Twitter than instead of going after one guy. Is that it?
I'm actually very weary of talking about the Tua thing, because every time you say that, well, he tested okay, oh, you don't care about these guys. Well, that's right. I don't care about these guys because I know they don't care about me.
Mark,
okay, it's like when I've been fired in the past, I've only had two athletes call and inquire as to my well-being. So, and one of them was not Tua.
Lamar Woodley and Hines Ward?
No, neither one of them either, Tim. You can read about it in my book, but I'm sure you could guess, and don't.
How's that Christmas Eve game against the Raiders going to look? Is anybody going to show up for Franco's jersey retirement? Maybe Franco won't at this point.
There's going to be a free meal, I'm sure. So he'll be there. Yeah, Tim, I worry about my view, although I'm the perfect guy when they suck to have host a viewing party. You know that? Tim, I've been saying how bad they're going to be since last season.
Yeah.
And you know what? It was unfair to maybe expect more on anybody's part when you're replacing a Hall of Fame quarterback, no matter how many problems he was having with mobility, you know, having to get rid of it real quick, just all the things that kind of dragged him down in terms of entertainment, the boy could still win games, couldn't he?
In the fourth quarter, too. So maybe some of these drives that the other teams are having would be mitigated by Roethlisberger holding on to the ball and marching the Steelers down the field, if not for scores, then at least to eat up enough time that the other team, like Zach Wilson, couldn't manage, what was it, 21 snaps. Jeez, 21 plays in two drives in the fourth quarter. That's unbelievable.
The Eagles are the lone undefeated team, right?
Yes, they are.
because Jacksonville, I thought Jacksonville was going to knock him off, but Philadelphia came back. And Obviously, going to play them soon and Miami soon. It's tough. It's going to be tough. How about the Giants at 3-1?
Yeah. Yeah, the Giants aren't any good. I think that's sort of inflated. They just beat the Bears. I thought the Bears would win, but that's still not a great win. I think they'll come back to the pack. But then again, the East stinks.
I do too, Tim, but as the Steelers have proven occasionally, if you get off to a good start and you're a mediocre team, you can kind of stumble in.
Mark, are you keeping tabs on the Penguins of the preseason?
Then again, you can do what the Steelers did when they were 8-5 and blew it, finished 8-8 with Duck and Mason.
Yes.
What were they the year before that? They were 7-2-1 and came in at 9-6-1 and didn't make the playoffs, correct?
Exactly, yes.
That'll teach them to tie. I saw the Penguin cuts. You know, I would keep Drew O'Connor, but I'm not surprised they set him down. I know for whatever reason they don't like him, and you'd think they would because he's 6'3 and plays straight ahead. They waves the Horna, who's 6'6". I mean, so much for the idea of getting bigger. But I don't think it matters who the number 12 forward is. It's going to be, I think, Josh Archibald, by the way.
Everybody sort of focuses on this. Like, you know, one thing that I always sort of roll my eyes at is the local media and the fans on Twitter make such a big deal over whoever the camp darling is. And then the camp, was it Caligula this year or whatever his name is?
I call him Caligula, Tim, after the Roman Emperor.
Yeah, that's what I tend to do, too, by accident.
And the Penthouse movie, which was not bad.
And then he gets sent down, and then it's always, oh, well, that makes sense. Sully sees something we don't. I'm like, well, which one is it? Are they never going to make a bad move because you're just going to sort of tip your cap to whatever decision was made in the long run?
Every league, every game knows what their roster is going to be before their training camp starts.
For the most part, yeah. I think, I don't think the Steelers knew that Jalen Warren was going to be better than Benny Snell. But for the most part, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm talking starting lineup.
Yeah, starting lineup in the case of hockey, top six and top four and who the starting goalie is, right?
Like, you get that token battle, like Dotson against Kendrick Green. Uh-huh. That was only because they didn't really want either of them to start, but they had no choice. What I do find interesting right now with the Penguins is, you know, if Carter's hurt to start the season, I think Teddy's probably going to be back. But let's say they're sort of center out of their usual four to start the season.
Mm-hmm.
I think they would feel comfortable with Samuel Poulin, who's just made the move from wing to center. I think they feel okay about him if he has to play at center.
Well, good. I'd like to see the clock get started on him and get a good long look at him if there is, in fact, injuries of Bluger and Carter, because that's one of the young investments, the few young investments, the draft choices of repute that needs to pay off for this team.
You know, it's funny, too, because I've been to camp a couple times, and I was at the first exhibition game. And it's funny because, you know, Sid, it's cliche to say, Sid and Letang look like they're in the best shape of their lives, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're ripped. I mean, Sid's going a little gray, but they have that, like, kind of youthful, you know, like, you know how, like, when an older guy is still in real good shape, he kind of looks younger because of that?
Like Hornquist?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's Sid and Tang are like that. Gino looks like a 36-year-old, and that's not a knock. He's just not the same cat as Tanger and Crosby when it comes to conditioning. I mean, much to his detriment, but it's not fair to think everybody should be like those two, right? Okay, Jeff Carter looks like a second-term wartime president. Okay, he just looks like he could go any second. I see him, Tim, and I'm saying, get Harry Truman up in the bullpen.
Is Aaron Judge the new home run champ of all time, or is it still Barry Bonds in your eyes? It's Bonds in my eyes.
Well, okay. Well, my position has been this. There is no home run record, not single season, not career. Now, in terms of literally, yeah, Bonds has both records, like 73 in a single season. What was it, 756 in his career? Is that right?
Yeah, yep.
Or was it 762? I forget. Anyway. But he holds the records, but nobody really counts them because, you know, he has thought to have been on steroids, even though he never flunked a PED test. But guys like, you know, Aaron Judge at 62, you know, it's still not 73. So, you know, until a clean guy hits 74 or 757, how come I can't remember how many career home runs Barry Bonds has? Because I'm going senile. But until somebody breaks those records clean, there is no home run record. Not really. Does that make sense?
No, I get what you're saying. It's just I can kind of do the same sort of methodology to validation and just say that Barry's counts. Like, I could just say that he hit the home runs during the steroid era. They didn't test back then. So be it. He's the home run champ. Clean and simple.
Yeah, but in a
it's
way,
it's 762, by the way, Mark. 762.
Yeah, I just looked it up too. 762. If you put me to a decision, Barry Bonds is the home run king, both single season and career, because the numbers don't lie and they spell disaster for you at sacrifice.
How was Aerosmith and Get the Let Out, Mark?
Really good. I saw five concerts in five nights, so I was exhausted. I saw Rod Stewart twice, Aerosmith twice, and Get the Let Out. Everything was good. Aerosmith and Rod both changed their set list like three or four songs worth from the first show I saw to the second. Aerosmith leaves out some of my favorite songs. Like they leave out Draw the Line, which I actually play as bad music on my show. They did play No More, No More, though, which they don't often play. They played Walking the Dog, so it was great. Tyler was great. Tyler was great. I had first row balcony seats for the second show. I had VIP seats, like in a banquet. You know what I mean? With a table and chairs, right on top of the stage, practically, like elevated about eight rows out in the middle of the stage. So that was good. That cost a lot of money, boy. But you know, what am I going to do with it? And so it was good. It was a good trip, but I am exhausted. Tim, I did three shows out there. Don't forget Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Right. Yeah.
I had like no time to gamble.
Well, that's almost a good thing.
Nah, I like doing that. I like to go to I was downtown. I like that. There's an old school casino down there, the El Cortez, that has like the best blackjack rolls in the city. And I didn't get to play there at all. The only time I played was at my home casino. I stayed at the D downtown because it was right across the street from the iHeartMedia studios.
Well, Mark Madden will be back. You'll be back to the Bet Rivers studios on Friday, right, Mark?
Yeah, I'm back all week, Tim. I'll be working all the shows till December.
So there's
unless I get a better offer.
If you can get paid to not do them, right? Like Tua, maybe.
Well, Tim, like I talked about on my show, I have 23 months left on my contract. It would take a severely reduced schedule for me to work past that. So they'll know about it because like the happiest people I know, Tim, are guys who are retired. Tom McMillan, Ed Bouchette. I had a couple meals with Sean McDowell and his lovely wife, Cindy, in Vegas. They're all retired. They're all inordinately happy.
Mark Madden, enjoy them while you've got them. Monday through Friday,
right.
3 to 6, 105.9 The Exit Weekly here at Trib Live on the Madden Monday podcast and on the Facebook live stream at 9:30 right here on Madden Ben's Unfiltered. You can get it at Trib Live.